Hello, and welcome to our podcast, The Truth About Network Security and Mobile Device Access. I'm Kate Dostart, and it's great to have you with us. In this podcast, we're going to engage in some fact or fiction to dispel some common misconceptions about network access, authentication, control, and over-the-air security for mobile laptops, PDAs, and smartphones. Joining me today to divide the myths from the mantras is Lisa Pfeiffer, known expert and speaker on all things mobile and wireless. Thanks for being here today, Lisa.
Thank you, Kate. I'm looking forward to our podcast.
Okay, let me tell the listeners how this works. I'll read a statement, and then Lisa will tell me if that statement is fact or fiction, and then explain why. So let's get started with the first one. Lisa, fact or fiction? Network-based access controls can be applied to mobile laptops, but not to PDAs or smartphones.
Well, this one is fiction, Kate. Architectures like Cisco Network Admission Control and TCG Trusted Network Connect, they use enforcement devices like switches and access points to authenticate users, assess endpoint state, and authorize network resource access. But there actually aren't any architectural constraints on endpoint type. Network access can be attempted from a laptop, a PDA, a smartphone, a voice over IP handset, a printer, a scanner, a camera, you name it. Any device that's capable of connecting to a network can potentially be controlled by NAC. However, NAC implementations often use a bit of endpoint software, and that's where the confusion comes in. For example, Microsoft Network Access Protection uses the NAP agent that's built into Windows Vista. Cisco NAC uses the Cisco Trust Agent, which now runs under Red Hat and most Win32 operating systems. Now, it's true that these two agents don't run under the Symbian or Windows Mobile operating systems that are used by PDAs and smartphones, but these are just two specific NAC endpoint implementations. There are many other ways to accommodate non-laptop endpoints. For example, most NAC products support browser-based captive portals as an alternative to agent-based login. A PDA or a smartphone can connect to a switch or an access point and then be automatically redirected to a web portal. During login, assessment can be driven by endpoint attributes, like operating system and browser type. For example, you could download an ActiveX control to scan a laptop, but perform simpler OS version and certificate checks on a mobile PDA. Furthermore, most embedded devices, like telephone handsets and barcode scanners, are currently authenticated into NAC-enabled networks based on their MAC address. In that case, endpoint assessment has to be accomplished through either pre- or post-admission port scans. That kind of endpoint-independent technique can also be used with PDAs and smartphones, either instead of or in addition to interactive browser-based login. So in summary, although PDA and smartphone security assessment is not as deep as laptop assessment today, these mobile devices can certainly be used in NAC-enabled networks.
Okay, here's the next one. Fact or fiction? Password authentication is the least expensive method of preventing access to a lost or stolen laptop.
This one is also fiction, if you look at the big picture, that is the total life cycle cost. Now, to be sure, authentication is your first and easiest defense against the misuse of a lost or stolen device, and passwords are still the most popular type of credential. And yes, creating a password is free. There's no tokens, card readers, or biometric scanners that you need to purchase or replace. And because all password-based authentication tends to be built into operating systems, you don't have to license or install something like a Gina extension or an 802.1x supplicant. However, the lifecycle maintenance for passwords can actually end up being very expensive. Surveys indicate that about 9 out of 10 users have required reset of a forgotten password during the past year. Most actually needed 3 or more password resets. Why? Well, about 60% of people have to remember at least 5 unique passwords. 18% have to remember more than 10 passwords. Humans just have a tough time keeping that many passwords straight. Furthermore, the length and complexity rules that we use to deter cracking actually makes that challenge worse. Most people do end up writing their passwords down or using the same password with multiple logins. Those practices increase the overall risk. In most authentication systems, all those password resets cost money. Analysts estimate that password resets represent about 30% of help desk costs. Each call, help desk call, probably costs you somewhere between $25 and $35. Then you add employee downtime. That's particularly important for mobile professionals who can't do their job without access and who may have a harder time reaching a help desk. These hidden costs behind password authentication add up over time, and you may end up actually spending more than you realize for a solution that, in the end, is pretty weak. The bottom line, when you consider any authentication method, you need to do the math. Don't just assume that passwords are less expensive. In fact, depending on your business, avoiding a single security breach could well be worth the cost of implementing stronger authentication.
All right, statement number three, fact or fiction. If the data stored on a mobile laptop or PDA is encrypted, it can still be stolen by spyware.
Well, I'll bet that some of our listeners are going to be surprised to hear me say that this one is a fact. Encrypting data at rest is an excellent way to protect private or regulated information that you store on a mobile laptop, a PDA, or a smartphone. I highly recommend doing this to deter disclosure when a lost or stolen device falls into the wrong hands. However, data at rest is not the only risk you have to be worried about. We also need to protect sensitive data as it's being used, whether that's typing it into a web form or transmitting it across the internet. Things like wireless encryption address the latter, but not the former. Specifically, there can be a security gap in between the time that stored data is decrypted and the time that it's then re-encrypted for transmission in a message. Spyware can take advantage of that gap to actually steal sensitive data. For example, consider a password safe. Many consumers, including myself, use these programs to encrypt logins, passwords, and account numbers stored on mobile devices. But when you extract a password from your safe and you copy it onto a secure web page, the password actually becomes clear text in a copy buffer. A keystroke logger that's previously implanted on your laptop can very easily intercept that password as it's being pasted or manually typed. Similar problems exist with volume and disk encryption whenever the legitimate user decrypts stored data and then copies it as clear text to an unsafe location, like an outgoing mail message. Some data encryption solutions do provide features to deter spyware. For example, restricting the applications that are permitted to use that protected data so that a Trojan can't easily access your contacts, your calendars, and your mail attachments. These programs can also take steps to avoid leaving decrypted data lying around in temp files, copy buffers, and memory locations after use is over. In other words, robust data encryption can narrow that security gap. But in the end, multiple layered defenses provide the most complete protection against data theft. That means encrypting data at rest and data in transit and using anti-malware programs to keep your mobile devices clean.
Fact or fiction? If employees always use a VPN to reach the corporate network, then business data is protected from public and network threats.
Well, this one is actually fiction. Here again, a VPN is an excellent way to keep private data safe when transmitted across any public network, whether you're talking about a hotel broadband network, a wireless hotspot, or a business center LAN. However, it's critically important to understand exactly what data is being protected and to then implement complementary measures to plug any data leaks. For example, if you visit any public access network and you browse your Windows network neighborhood, in most, you'll very quickly see other user laptops with exposed file shares. Now, you might or might not be able to access those file shares, depending on whether they're password protected. But many corporate laptops routinely expose this kind of information by sending out LAN broadcasts immediately after they connect to a public access network. And that frequently occurs before the user launches their VPN tunnel. It may even continue after the tunnel is established. This is why I recommend that file sharing be disabled on interfaces that you use to connect to a public network, and that a personal firewall also be used to block both inbound and outbound NetBIOS traffic. Another very common exposure in a public access network involves personal transactions conducted over the public network. Employees might launch their VPN when they conduct business transactions, but they might bypass or even disable the VPN when they conduct their personal internet activities. This behavior can still expose business data in both direct and indirect ways. For example, employees might know better than to forward business documents to a personal POP account. But do they use the same passwords for both personal and business accounts? Endpoint security policies would force all traffic through the corporate VPN or disconnect that public access connection if the VPN goes down, are one way to reduce the risk on IT-managed mobile devices. So in summary here, VPNs can mitigate many important public network threats, but they really should never be relied on as a standalone security method. Always take additional steps to harden the endpoint and also to deter this kind of risky end-user behavior.
And Lisa, what is the most common misunderstanding that companies encounter when securing mobile laptops, PDAs, and smartphones, and how can it be avoided?
Well, Kate, in all the fact or fiction statements that we discussed so far, the true culprit was a misunderstanding about what a very popular and generally effective security measure really does. Mobile device authentication, stored data encryption, and VPN tunnels are all widely deployed and proven methods of reducing risk. And I do wish that everyone deployed at least those security measures on all their mobile devices. There's certainly room for improvement on that score. However, what causes these kind of misunderstandings is actually when people make assumptions about which threats are actually mitigated and whether there are any unaddressed vulnerabilities. So I'm going to say that the most common misunderstanding is really a failure to accurately assess mobile risk. That includes understanding how well the measures that you deploy actually work, and also how employees really use their mobile devices. The best VPN or strongest authentication in the world isn't going to be effective if it stops workers from getting their job done. Security assessments can go a long way to avoiding such problems. Pre-deployment assessments can help you identify and quantify your risk. Post-deployment assessment can spot misconfigurations and gaps. Don't just run a few port scans on devices in a test network. Watch what your mobile users actually do in real-life situations. Teach them about why security measures are being used, and then listen to their feedback. An effective security deployment is always going to be a process of continuous improvement.
Lisa, that was a very enlightening discussion on network security and mobile access. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lisa.
Thank you, Kate. I hope that clearing up some of these misconceptions can actually help our listeners strengthen their mobile security initiatives.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us today. I'm Kate Dostart, and remember, mobility keeps your enterprise moving forward.